morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf alongside Nick Wright, Kevin Wilds, Brian Westbrook with us on this Wednesday morning. We got a fun show for you today. Is it now Super Bowl or bust for Tom Brady? And why is Kevin Garnett so mad? And could Tua already be slipping? That's where we start this morning with the NFL draft. Now, just about 2 weeks away, all eyes seem to be on Tua Tagovailoa. The Alabama quarterback took to Twitter yesterday. So he released a hype video of his journey leading up to the draft. But without the ability to bring him in and work him out, there's still this cloud of uncertainty around how healthy he actually is. Nick, I'll kick it off with you. You buying all this Tua hype, or is his health just still too worrisome?
Jenna, I don't believe it's hype at all. I understand the red flags about the health, but the on-field production rivals that not just of any quarterback in this class, but of basically any quarterback in college football history. I know we have no short-term or long-term memory in this country anymore, but so allow me to take you all the way back to January of 2018 when a 19-year-old Tua Tagovailoa takes the field at halftime of the national championship game. His team is down 13-0. Jalen Hurts has completed three passes in the entirety of the first half. And Tua leads the Alabama Crimson Tide back, throws a game-tying touchdown late in the fourth, a game-winning touchdown, a perfect pass in overtime to win the national championship. The next year, he threw 25 touchdowns before he threw his first interception. He lost twice in college football. Both times, they were to 15-0 undefeated national champion all-time great teams in Clemson in 19, or I'm sorry, Clemson in 18, and then the LSU Tigers in 19. This is a guy who set the all-time college quarterback efficiency record and then was on pace to reset it this past year. We all talk about Joe Burrow's amazing 2019 season. Until the injury, Tua was having a better season, had a better efficiency, more yards per attempt, 33 touchdowns to three interceptions. This is an all-time great player, Wilds, and I get the concerns about the injury, but this isn't hype. This is a guy who, while he was playing college football, was one of the best and most productive quarterbacks we've simply ever seen, Kevin.
So when he put out this hype video, I think the strategy is, let's get people hype. Well, it worked on me. I watched this video and I got super hype, and I think it's a brilliant decision for them to put this out. This wasn't him retweeting something that a fan did. This was a Tua production that is out there for a reason. And I think it not only shows that he's healthy and motivated and wants to win, I also think it shows that he's a smart decision maker. He's looking around and said, wow, there's some question marks about me. Let me start my own campaign. And he's trying to move up the draft. I think it's super, super smart. Look, the projections are first draft pick, it's $36 million. If you're number three, you get $33 million. If he slips to six, it's $26 million. It's a $10 million difference. So I could argue you should spend $2 million on your hype video and you'd still make money. I think this is a brilliant move, and it shows just how smart Tua is, not just on the field, but off the field as well, Jenna.
But Brian, to Nick's point, I don't think anyone doubts how good Tua is. We watched him in college. His production on the field speaks for itself. The doubt is obviously, can he stay healthy? Because he is coming off a pretty substantial injury, that hip injury. Is there anything, Brian, that Tua can do right now, hype video or anything else, because he can't go and meet with them in person, to convince teams that he is indeed 100%?
You know what? You're absolutely right, Jenna. There's nothing that, when you look at the tape, you say there's nothing else that he can show you on the college level. He was accurate. He was efficient. He had low interceptions, only 11 total interceptions throughout his college career. And I think more importantly than all of those things, that he proved that he is a true leader in a Nick Saban offense that can go out there and win football games, yep, quality football games against great opponents. And so when you talk about the injury, I just remember back to my playing career. In 1996, when I was a high school senior, I tore my ACL. And at that point, an ACL injury was a year-long injury, and nobody in college wanted to touch me except for the University of Villanova because they thought the ACL was an injury that nobody could recover from. And that was, you know, 20-something years ago. Now we talk about Tua and we compare it to the Bo Jackson injury, and that was 20-something years ago. I think this young man at a young age can come back and play very healthily, helpful in as far as in the NFL. I think he can do a great job for a football team. I also think when I met this kid at the Super Bowl, you remember when he was on the set at the Super Bowl, I talked to him and I talked to his dad. Yeah. And you talk about a grounded individual, a guy that's going to go in there and have the team rally around him, have them ready to play. This is the type of guy that you're going to get, a proven leader, a guy that you want to be the face of the franchise. To me, any organization will be very, very pleased with being able to get Tua. And if they can get him at the right time and at the right price, then I think it will be perfect for the Dolphins or anybody else that wants to take a chance on drafting him.
Speaking of the Dolphins, Wilds, let me throw this little wrinkle in. Mel Kiper came out and said that the Dolphins might be now looking at Oregon's Justin Herbert at 5 instead of Tua, who we thought, which means Tua would drop if Tua drops. Do you, our resident Patriots fan, you see a scenario where the Patriots could grab Tua?
I mean, wouldn't that be awesome? Wouldn't that just be wonderful, not only for my personal life, but also for the show, to just see if we come on after draft and Tua is on the Patriots, and poor Nick shows up, and we're like, does Nick need more makeup? He keeps on sweating so much about Bill Belichick and Tua. Oh, it would just be delightful. I would just love it. But Nick, before I throw it to you, let me tell you the thing that drives me crazy. And it happens every week. When a team goes in to play the Ravens, and the head coach is asked, like, how do you stop Lamar Jackson? And they're like, oh, geez, how do we stop him? Oh, geez, he's so good. He's this. He's tremendous. Yeah, he was the 32nd pick, and everyone passed on him. That drives me insane. So this is going to happen with Tua in 2 years. People are going to be like, oh, we can't stop Tua. He's so good. Who would have known? Everyone knows. We're warning you right now. So if the Patriots can draft Tua, I would be overjoyed, Nick. I feel like you would be super worried.
Well, you should be thrilled with if they were to get him. Now, by the way, speaking of Lamar, I can only imagine how much it hurts you, a Patriot fan, that you guys took Sony Michel instead of Lamar Jackson. But that's neither here nor there.
I know that.
I do, though. Let me first address the Justin Herbert stuff. If a team takes Justin Herbert over Tua Tagovailoa, that is a fold the franchise moment. It's like, oh, it's been good. We've had a nice run. Now let's go try something else. The idea, yes, Tua has health concerns. Justin Herbert has production concerns, big game concerns, how good he is concerns. Like, I respect Kiper, and he's just reporting what he's hearing, but that would be categorical insanity. But let's say that does happen. And so the Dolphins take Herbert, and Tua is available at 6. I just want people to understand, Brian, what it would take for a team like the Patriots to move up, forget to 3, even to 6. Remember when Atlanta traded up to get Julio Jones? That was a trade to move up to exactly number 6. They traded the 26th pick, a second-round pick, 2 fourth-round picks, and a future number 1. So if the Patriots want to get in the game here, we're talking about you give away a 1, next year's 1, multiple 3s because you don't have a second-round pick this year, and that might not be enough. So the precedent says if the Patriots want to get in the Tua game, even if he drops it, Brian, it would take absolutely a king's ransom to move up into that top 8 to ensure they get him.
Nick, when you bring all that up, I mean, to me, that just sounds like a lot. That sounds like something the Patriots would not be willing to do, even though when you look at it, Tua seems to be the perfect quarterback for their organization. He's a team guy. He would be willing to be coached. He's been coached by a tough coach in college already. He's going to go out there and win. He's not going to turn the ball over. So he's going to do everything similar to Tom Brady, and you hope he be able to win the same way as Tom Brady. And so he's very close to Tom Brady-esque. But I think when you talk about all those picks that they will have to mortgage their future to be able to get up, to me, that sounds like a little bit too much.
They got Stidham. Don't worry, right, Wilds? They're good right now. Okay. They got Stidham, so they can hold Perfect off deal. On making any big decisions with any of their draft capital.
Yeah. Here's a message from our sponsor, ZipRecruiter. Right now, we cannot be overwhelmed. We have to work to keep our loved ones safe and protect our communities. We have to work to stay strong, to stay connected, to stay focused. We have to work to inspire, to innovate, to build new solutions. But for all of this to work, we have to work together. At ZipRecruiter, we connect employers and people every day. But today is different. We are partnering with first responders, government officials, the medical community, the innovators, and the manufacturing, transportation, and food distribution industries to make sure we are finding the right people for the right jobs right now. Let's work together. ZipRecruiter.com/work together.
Back here at Brian Westbrook, time for playing Drawing a Blank. NFL Network's Brian Billick said yesterday, anything less than a Super Bowl is a failed season for Brady and the Bucs. In other words, Super Bowl or bust for TB12. Not in other words, those are the exact words. Nick, realistic expectations for Brady's first season in Tampa are blank.
Around 500. And that's not just about the record. It'll be around 500 times that Kevin Wilds blames Chris Godwin's depth of his route for incomplete passes. It'll be around 500 times that Tom Brady is throwing it away or ducking for his life when Bruce Arians says, let's try a 9-step drop this time, Tommy. And around 500 is what the Bucs will find their record at. 7-9, 8-8, 9-7. And that'll be a quality season. It'll be the greatest age 43 season we've ever seen from a quarterback, so I would like to prematurely give credit for it, and I disagree with Billick entirely, but Brian Westbrook, around 500 is realistic expectation.
When I think about the expectations of the Bucs and Tom Brady's first year, I think of Jim Moore, and I know if you guys remember the great Jim Moore rant when he talked about the playoffs. You're talking about the playoffs right now?
Playoffs.
What are you talking about? This football team, they were 7-9 last year, but they haven't had a history of winning. They haven't had double-digit wins since 2010. They were 2-4 in the division last year. I think they will be a tick better than they were last year, which kind of lands them right there in that 500 area that you're talking about, Nick. But I also think when you add that 7th playoff spot, that gives the Bucs an opportunity to potentially slide into the playoffs, just like Jim Mora was talking about there just a little bit.
Jenna, I'm going to go with Yacht Rock. We'll play a little Yacht Rocky music here. I think it's going to be a pleasant season. Oh. I don't think he's after the Super Bowl. I think Bill Belichick was more Deadliest Catch. Like, it's cold, it's rainy, the crabs are coming. You didn't get enough crabs. Like, there's no crabs here. It's just chaos and stress. He's like, you know what? I just want to go fishing. Put on some Yacht Rock, chill out. So I disagree that it's Super Bowl or bust. I think he's just looking for a nice, pleasant experience. Yacht Rocky. Yacht Rock.
Nothing has ever been more, ever been more Kevin Wilds than Yacht Rock. I can already see him. Two sweaters tied around his neck, some Sperry shoes, riding out on one of his billionaire friends' boats in the Cape, waving at Tom Brady as he's heading south.
I haven't been to the Cape since I was 5 years old.
Perfect.
The Cape.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Martha's Vineyard. My bad. You've elevated faster.
Stop
My
it.
Bad, Wilds. I apologize. Go ahead,
Jim. Okay. You got to go all the way to Nantucket, Nick.
The answer's actually... I was going to say that. I was like, the answer's actually Nantucket, Nick. On to Ben Roethlisberger, now the 38-year-old quarterback coming off elbow surgery. But fret not, Steelers fans. Big Ben said, I'll be ready when it's time. Nick, Big Ben's 2020 season will be blank.
Jameis-esque, and much like my first answer, this has multiple layers. Jameis-esque either A, because he's throwing a whole bunch of picks like Jameis did last year. Remember, only Jameis has more picks in the NFL over, I think, the last 5 seasons than Big Ben. Or Jameis-esque because Jameis replaces him because Ben can't get through the whole year healthy, or he's just a shot fighter at age 38 and year 17. So one way or another, Brian Westbrook, even if Mike Tomlin, the coaching staff, and the defense hold it together for the defensive side of things, this year for Big Ben, I think, is going to be a little Jameis-esque.
Yeah, the 2020 season for Ben, I think, will be solid. And I'm not talking about his weight. I'm just talking about his play. I think when you talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers' offense, they were fourth worst rushing team in the league last year. 2018, they were the second worst rushing team. In fact, they haven't had a good rushing game since Le'Veon Bell left that football team. And when you don't have a rushing game and you have an older quarterback, you're asking him to carry the entire weight of an offense. I don't think a quarterback coming off this type of injury later on in his career, like Big Ben is doing, will have a great year. They just have to hope that their defense comes up with a bunch of turnovers, gets them short field, and they're able to win a lot of games that way without scoring a bunch of points.
Jenna, I'm going to go with microchipped. Big Ben is working out with his microchip football that everybody uses in practice, and it's measuring three things. It's measuring his spin rate, it's measuring his velocity, and it's measuring my favorite, spiral efficiency. And then you put it into the computer, and it comes out and says, oh, Big Ben, you're 60% of the way there. You're 75% of the way there. Unfortunately, I think you live by the microchip, die by the microchip. It's a famous saying. So I think, like, we're going to look and say, well, does Big Ben have it? Just be like, hey, Ben, here's the data. Remember we gave you that microchip ball? You don't got it anymore. Sorry. Thanks for all your help with this franchise over the last 20 years. But it's over for you because your spiral efficiency is down 20%.
So what do they do? Like, go back to the duck? Questions for the Steelers. On to Kyler Murray now. Expectations seem to be high coming off his Rookie of the Year season. And Cardinals head coach Cliff Kingsbury said they expect Kyler to take a big step. So, Nick, sophomore season's a big one for quarterbacks. Kyler's ceiling in year two is blank.
I'm going to say lower than expected. People are elevating Kyler to a level that I personally don't have him at. The touchdown rate numbers last year were concerning. For a guy to throw 540 passes and only throw 20 touchdowns, for some context there, that's a touchdown rate lower than Kyle Allen, lower than Mitch Trubisky, lower than ahead of only Kyle Allen, Mitch Trubisky, Andy Dalton, and Joe Flacco. The whole rest of the league is ahead of him in that. His yards per attempt are under 7. I know there's high expectations because they got DeAndre Hopkins, but I think the ceiling, much like his height, is a little lower than people actually expect. So that's where I'm at on this.
Also, it always goes back to the hype jokes. Guys like me don't like hype jokes at all. And so watch your mouth with that. When you talk about Kyler Murray's ceiling for his second year, I think about Michael Jordan and his great quote, "The ceiling is the roof." And I'll say this, and I think it's probably a little bit higher than that, but I think that when you watch Kyler Murray last year, he was able to scramble around, make moves, make plays with his legs as well as his arms. But if you talk about the second half of the season, the first half without Kenyon Drake, he only had 7 touchdown passes. The second half with Kenyon Drake, 13 touchdown passes. Kenyon Drake does a great job in pass protection, and you add DeAndre Hopkins. I think that gives Kyler Murray a bunch of options offensively, and the ceiling at that point may be the roof. But I think he might exceed the roof when you talk about Michael Jordan and Kyler Murray.
Wow. I did not have Michael Jordan comparisons on the show in this block, Jen. I'm very excited. Nick is, of course, super stressed already in the show. I'm going to go MVP-ish. MVP-ish. The last two MVPs have been sophomore quarterbacks, Lamar and Patrick Mahomes. Here's the problem, though. Cardinals are only at, like, 6.5 wins for the season on the betting lines. Like, you got to win, like, more than 7 games to be really in the MVP conversation. But I also like Brian's Michael Jordan answer, Nick.
And I apologize, Brian. You're right. I should have known that the under 5'10 club has to stick together. So I should have been more gentle there. I apologize, my friend.
I'm right on the cusp of 5'10. Right
on
the cusp, depending on the shoes I wear.
Okay.
That's right. Serious business.
Okay.
Just like I'm 5'4¾", Brian Westbrook. Just on the cusp of 5'5". Back to the Bucks now. Yeah. So this was fun yesterday. They revealed their new uniforms for the 2020 season. Take a look. Clearly not going back to that creamsicle look, which obviously made my daughter sad because creamsicles. Nick, the Bucks' new jerseys are blank.
A missed opportunity. And I'm not one of those people who just hates everything new, is anti-change. But damn it, if you're going to go all in on Tom Brady bringing the Bucks up from the ashes, then he's got to wear the jerseys they wore when they were in the ashes. Not the jerseys that look just like the ones they wore the one year they were really good. Tom Brady in the creamsicle, in the orange, that's what everybody wants to see.
Creamsicle.
There's red jerseys all across sports. That is, so Tampa, lean into this thing. That's what you should have done. I understand why you want to get away from that, but there is a way to rewrite that part of Bucks history where if you win with Tom, then people will associate those jerseys with you having the greatest quarterback ever, bringing you back to greatness. So I think it's a missed opportunity, Brian Westbrook.
Nick, you are so wrong about this. This reminds me of Warren Sapp, Derrick Brooks, and John Lynch, the good days of the Bucks. You don't want to go back to the creamsicle when they were terrible. You want to go back to the winning days. And it's been since those guys played for the Bucks that they've had winning days. And so for me, this is a great move from the Bucks. And one thing that they did, what a lot of organizations should certainly do, is listen to the fans. Their ownership group listened to the fans. They brought back the jersey that the fans actually love, and it just happens to be during the time when they were winning a bunch of games. To me, this is a great move by the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Jenna, I'm going to go with dishonest. I looked at what these color these jerseys were. They're white, red, black, and pewter. Like, you know what? Miss me with the pewter stuff. That's gray. Just say we got gray jerseys. They're gray. They're gray jerseys, Jenna.
It's fancy. Pewter's fancy, Wild.
Pewter.
I like the
break with pewter. They're gray. You rolled out gray jerseys.
Good stuff. Brady's all set with pewter. Back here, first things first, look who's joining us now. Ravens All-Pro defensive end, Calais Campbell. Good morning, Calais. Thanks for being with us. Tell us what you've been up to these days, how you're spending your time.
You know, just trying to stay healthy and just kick back around the house. So I find creative ways to work out and enjoy myself.
Creative ways to work out. A guy who's 6'8", 305. What kind of creative ways around the house? What kind of creative things are you doing around the house right now?
Yeah, I've been doing stuff I haven't done in years. You know, obviously, you know, when you play as long as I've played, you know, you've done a lot of different workouts. And I kind of cherry picked through all the workouts I've done in my life and kind of create the best things for me. But this has definitely been a challenge. You know, I do a lot of stairs because I live in a high rise. So I have 38 flights, and so I do a lot of stairs. I'm tired of stairs, but I just got to keep doing them because there's no other alternative. And then a lot of stability work, but it's been a lot of fun.
Calais, listen, you're one of the most decorated active players in the league. We're going to get into all that. You just won two amazing awards this offseason, Walter Payton Man of the Year and the All-Decade Team, and you changed teams. So a lot to get to about the present day. But I want to go back a ways first because I'm always fascinated by people such as yourself. You're a star basketball player in high school. You long jump 21 feet. You triple jump 44 feet. You're a monster football player. What was the youngest age you remember either someone saying to you or you believing, oh, I'm going to be a pro athlete? Like, do you have a story or an anecdote from when you were a kid? Like, oh, this is what I'm going to do for a living.
I think that's a very interesting question. I remember being 6 years old and like just loving football. Like football was like my ultimate dream since I was six. And I didn't know so much that I was gonna be in the NFL, but I knew I loved it and I wanted to do it for a long time. Fast forward to going into to high school, I was 13 years old. My dad asked me what I wanted to be when I got older. And I said, I wanted to be in the NFL. And so, he made me work way harder than I've ever worked before in my life. I mean, literally we started going out and to the local high school area, and running track that whole summer, and like literally put me through football drills nonstop. And I mean, it was kind of one of those things where I was like, dang, I didn't know I signed up for all this, but you know, obviously it paid off. And then the first time somebody really told me that I actually, like, you know, outside of my family, that I had a chance to make it was my sophomore year of high school. My high school football coach, Ryan Mullaney, told me that if I worked hard enough and kept, you know, just and did everything the right way, stayed disciplined, that I'd be in the NFL one day.
Calais, the Ravens' average age is 26. You recently said that you felt like your last 3 years, 30, 31, 32, you've been getting better. You've been in your prime. What's the balance of, are you getting smarter? Are you getting physically stronger? Is it the experience? How do you attribute that?
I think it's a combination of a few things. You know, I think I've always kind of been like a late bloomer, you know, believe it or not. You know, I was super uncoordinated my whole life. And I really didn't feel like I got control of my body until I was a little bit older. So that probably plays a little bit of a role. You know, I mean, I think, you know, God blessed me with a lot of, you know, physical talent. But I try to put a lot of time and effort to take care of my body. I mean, I invest a lot of money, a lot of time into taking care of my body and being in the best shape I could be in. And I think that combined with the knowledge of the game, I mean, playing, you know, 12 years, I have so much upstairs in my head, you know, that just, you know, allows me to be quicker and faster and anticipate things better. And I think that all pays off.
All right, Klaas, you're now joining a Ravens team coming off a 14-2 season, predominantly because of a guy named Lamar Jackson. I'm sure you heard of him. How excited are you to play with the MVP?
I'm very excited about it. You know, how could you not be? I mean, the guy is ridiculously special. You know, I watch him on tape. I mean, there's things he does that, like, it's just, you know, you're like, you know, it's a wow factor. You know, and you know, that's not even just seeing him run the ball. I mean, I see him, you know, creating and throwing the ball, you know, and it's, you know, it's very fun to see. And as a defender, you know, that's what you want. You want guys putting points on the board, give you opportunity to go out there and rush the passer and make plays. And, you know, I feel like my skill set, you know, if I can get it, you know, if we can play with the lead majority of this year, you know, it's going to be a fun year. You know, I mean, it's always fun regardless. I love the game of football, but playing with the lead makes it just a little bit more fun.
Well, and Calais, your second year in the league, you're in the Super Bowl. You have a late lead in a Super Bowl. And I don't know if you were young enough to think, oh, this is how it's going to be. But obviously a decade later, haven't been back. Came really close. I mean, if those refs, Wiles doesn't like to, you know, acknowledge this, but if the refs don't blow the Miles Jack scoop and score, you guys are going to the Super Bowl instead of the Patriots. But, you know, we don't have to get into that. You guys had one stolen from me in Jacksonville. We all know it. We don't have to discuss it. But I want to ask you this. Does this feel like going into the year, potentially the best team you've been on since that team that went to the Super Bowl in Arizona very early in your career?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, obviously, it takes time. You know, I have to get around the guys and see. But on paper, you know, it sure does look special. You know, obviously, each year is his own separate year. You can't go off of last year's success and anticipate this year's success. I don't care who you are. You got to earn it each and every year. That's what makes the Patriots so special, because they earned it every single year. You know, I did experience some great success, and I feel like, you know, I have a history with teams being, you know, really good, and, you know, getting just there. You know, I'm ready to get over the hump, man. I'm tired of just, you know, I've been to Super Bowl and lost when I was a rookie that year. And then, you know, I did think that, you know, I was probably going to be going to Super Bowls or at least in the playoffs every year, because that was just what I knew. You know, everybody always told me, they say how it is. But as, you know, 22-year-old kid, like, you know, it's like, yeah, whatever, man. This is nice. I'm going to enjoy this, and I'm going to expect this, you know, every year. And then the next year we went and we lost to the Saints, who won it all, and to the playoffs, you know, and that was fun. You know, and then, you know, it was dry. You know, we didn't go for a while. And then, you know, 2015, we ended up going to the championship game as well. You know, we lost to Carolina, and we got blown out. You know, injuries kind of took a toll on us. And then 2017 with Jacksonville, ended up going to the championship game again. And that one, you know, we were up late in the game, you know, this close, you know, and that one hurts the most. Well, the Super Bowl hurts the most. So that was up there, though, with just being so close, you know, knowing you have a chance to win and not getting there. And it's like, man, I'm ready to, you know, just to get that ring, man. That's the ultimate goal. You know, I feel like I'm in a great situation for it. I feel like this team has all the pieces in place. You know, it really comes down to execution, to making it happen, you know, week in and week out. You know, so I'm ready to roll my sleeves up and get dirty, man.
Calais, Nick roots for the Chiefs and I root for the Patriots. And we heard about this move. We're just like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. Just the rich get richer with the Ravens. Pro Football Focus had you as the run defender of the year. The Ravens had the fifth best run defense. And now you're on the team. What makes that defense special? And what are you trying to do this year?
Yeah, I think first things first is the defense, the back end is incredible. I mean, you got all pro after all pro after all pro. You know, when you look at that back end and what they can do and the depth, you know, it really gets you excited as a D lineman. And, you know, I felt like in the front seven, you know, the mentality is always earn the right to rush the passer. So you had to shut down the run and make teams one dimensional. And then if the offense score points when you shut down the run early, I mean, you're going to have, you know, just pin your ears back. It's going to be a lot of fun playing almost schoolyard ball. You know, you can work on different pass rush moves, you know, out there, you know, just living the dream, baby.
I know your friends, Clayus, with a bunch of guys on the Ravens. You haven't had a chance to really practice or play with them yet. But they had a motto last year that went viral, Big Trust. Have you embraced it? Can you give us an idea of where you are on the Big Trust scale right now? Are you quite there yet?
I'm still learning about all the different, cool things about the Ravens, you know. And I remember seeing that go kind of viral. And I'm a big fan of it, you know. I'm still trying to figure out exactly what it means, you know. But I know,
you know. You and me both, Clayus.
You know, the one I like a lot, Lamar Jackson always had that nobody cares, work harder shirt. That's one of my favorite slogans ever since I've seen it. You know, nobody cares, work harder. That's I feel like that's the right mentality to have for any football player. Because obviously everybody wants to talk about accolades, wants to talk about, you know, how they could be this, could be that. At the end of the day, just hey, work harder and prove it.
Calais, I talked about at the beginning that what an offseason it's been for you, not only being traded, but some individual accolades that have to rank up there with just about anything I would imagine you've accomplished in your professional life. I know football's the ultimate team sport, but the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award is something that the list of recipients of that is almost as exclusive as list of Super Bowl MVPs. And then an all-decade team that, at least to me, you were a shoo-in for. I know they're two very different things, but can you tell us about the emotion and your reaction to hearing about both of those top-of-the-resume honors?
Yeah, you know, the all-decade team, you know, that was just announced a couple of days ago. And obviously, you know, you can imagine, you know, just playing this game and wanting to be the best at it. You know, I don't think anybody plays this game and doesn't want to be the best. So you play this game and you really want to be the best. You work hard at it every single day. And to be considered, you know, over the last 10 years, to be one of the best players in the game, that's a very special honor. You know, I was walking around with a big smile on my face the last couple of days. You know, I've been, you know, just ecstatic the whole time. You know, this is the ultimate. You know, just as a football player on the field, you know, I mean, winning the Super Bowl and getting a gold jacket are the two, like, you know, the main goals you have, you know, and this is a big part of that. Being on the all-decade team, you know, that's a huge honor. And then going back to the Walter Payton Man of the Year, you know, that's the most prestigious award in sports. You know, obviously, it says a lot about who you are as a person and what you stand for. And, you know, to me, you know, that's something I know my dad would be proud about. You know, my dad passed away when I was 17. He was a big influence in my life, you know, and he really, I named my foundation after him. And I know that, you know, he'll be proud of all the things I've done in my life, but that I think he would be most proud of. And so that means a lot to me.
Clayus, NFL draft around the corner. Is there any player that you've watched where you say, ooh, I really like this person. This person's going to be a star?
I usually pay attention to all the, you know, to all the draft talk, and I try to figure out who I think is going to be special and whatnot. You know, I feel like, you know, last year, you know, I thought, okay, Josh Allen has a chance to be special, and then we end up getting him. I'm like, oh wow, okay, that's kind of unique. Now I got a chance to help this guy develop, and that was a lot of fun. And seeing him go to the Pro Bowl in his rookie year, and you know, produce 10 plus sacks, you know, and just kind of create a standard for himself. That was fun to watch. This year, you know, I don't think the guys that I was looking at, you know, we're going to have a chance to get, they're going to be gone pretty quick. But I do like the Derrick Brown kid, you know, and I don't always just do D linemen. I look at all the position groups, but the Derrick Brown kid, I like that, you know, he has a great pass rush to his game, but he plays physical. I mean, he's nasty in the run game, plays with good leverage, good hands. He's so explosive, and then he just, I mean, he plays nasty, you know, the way D line is supposed to be played. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to see what he does in the NFL.
Calais, two games on your schedule I'm sure are already circled. Your former team, the Jaguars, and maybe the Chiefs. Nick's guy, Patrick Mahomes. Just make us all
nah, man, he's going to take that week off. Nah, Calais, listen, man. You deserve one extra bye week. Don't even worry about that Chiefs game, man. Don't worry about it.
That's the one.
You're good.
That's the one. Hey. Back here, first things first. It is now time for Butt First, sponsored by Delta Faucets. See what Delta can do. So the NFL released their 2010 All-Decade Team earlier this week. It got Nick thinking. The thinking got Nick writing. The writing gave us this. Nick Wright's All-Decade Team. Nick, you want to talk us through it?
Well, yeah, this is my All-Decade First Team because the NFL did something different. In years past, they had always done a first and second team all decade, and it's an important distinction because being first team all decade was almost a golden ticket to a gold jacket. Over 95% of first team all decade guys became Hall of Famers. This year, they combined the two teams. So I looked at the NFL's all decade team, and I decided what would the first team have been. Some of these, we don't need to go through the offensive linemen, obviously Brady, obviously Peterson. But Shady McCoy beats out Lynch and Gore for the other running back spot. Over 10,000 yards, the most touchdowns in the decade. Gronk's obvious. Julio and AB beat out Larry Fitzgerald and Calvin Johnson. Antonio Brown, we might not like him, but he had the most touchdowns of any receiver this decade by far. Julio had the most yards. Those are the right answers. Defense, it gets a lot more complicated. Look at the D-line. J.J. Watt's a no-brainer for first team. Cam Jordan, Calais Campbell, we had them both on the show this week. They both have 5 Pro Bowls. They both have 3 All-Pros. They're both at 80-plus sacks. I went with Cam, but that's kind of a coin flip. The other big question mark was, you see Luke Kuechly there, Bobby Wagner. These resumes, they were in the same draft class. Kuechly won Defensive Rookie of the Year over Wagner that year. Kuechly as a Defensive Player of the Year, so he edges him out. Everyone else, I think, is pretty self-explanatory. But if there was, Wilds, a first-team all-decade, that's, I believe, what it would have looked like, which means those guys right there should feel pretty good for the most part about their Hall of Fame chances, Wilds.
I love it. I love it. We dug into the stats a little bit more when I saw your list. I was like, wow, Gronk is somehow even better than I realized, and I think he's amazing. 15% of Gronk's catches were touchdown. 15%. He's amazing. He led the entire decade in receiving touchdowns. So when you think back the last decade, don't think about a wide receiver. Think about Gronk in the end zone.
You know, Nick, when I look at your list, I have to look at the running backs, and I love Adrian Peterson. I love LeSean McCoy. When I think about Adrian Peterson, there was only a few players in the NFL that when we were on the bench, the offense was on the bench, that I would get up off the bench and go to the sideline and watch. And you actually have two running backs that, even though LeSean McCoy was on my team, that I would watch, course. But Adrian Peterson was one of those guys that I would get up and just watch him, just watch the things that he was able to do. And when I think about his style, I say he has a punishing style. He has breakaway speed. And we really haven't seen that type of ability since probably Walter Payton. And when you watch Adrian Peterson throughout the year, that style hasn't changed. I watched him a little bit last year, and of course, he probably can't do all the things he used to be able to do early on in this decade, but he still had that punishing style and breakaway speed. And of course, I got to give some props to my boy, LeSean McCoy. Over 10,000 rushing yards this decade, over 13,000 yards from scrimmage this decade. Impressive resume. I'm glad that he was able to get a Super Bowl with the Kansas City Chiefs. I love LeSean McCoy, and I love Adrian Peterson as well.
All right, Brian, good stuff. We are now going to give you some stories to start your morning. So Tom Brady was on the Howard Stern Show a little bit earlier this morning. TV12, among other things, said, "I never had a backup plan. I always just envisioned what would happen. And in a lot of ways, it ended up happening." Nick, you buying this?
Oh, I'm buying it. And I absolutely love this quote from Tom Brady. And for young people watching that have a goal in mind, and it is a very lofty goal, I think this is the only way you have any chance of achieving it. I think that if you are trying for ultimate true greatness in any field, you have to already know the end of the story. You have to already know you are getting there, just figuring out the path along the way. So I think Wilds, people maybe expected me to take a shot at Brady. Now, in the interview, he admitted smoking weed in high school. He dropped a lot of F-bombs. There are some things that I feel like we can criticize him for. But this quote in particular, Wilds, I love. And I think for young people watching this show or listening to Tom, it's words to live by if you're trying to achieve something truly special, Kevin.
I mean, what a day today is, huh, Brian and Jenna? Nick comes on and says how much he loves Tom Brady. Hey, you know what? Right back at you, buddy. You know what my kid's favorite player is? Patrick Mahomes. And when we're out there, they throw the ball to me. They say, Mahomes. And I've never said it on air. But now if we're being honest, and if we're being honest, you love Brady. My kids, I have to pretend to be Travis Kelce outside. We also love Mahomes and the Wilds family. So it's a good day for everybody, Brian.
You know, Nick, and I heard what you said. I absolutely disagree. To me, this is the worst quote that you can ever tell any kid to never have a backup plan. Well, what do you mean not to have a backup plan? I want my kids to have a backup plan in case something happens. Because here's the deal. If I didn't have a backup plan, then I wouldn't have went to Villanova. I probably would have went to a prep school, things like that. And sometimes in sports and in general, and really in life, if your first plan doesn't work, then you need to have a backup plan. You have to have something that you can do after that first thing doesn't work, in case it doesn't work. And so to me, this is terrible advice for all children across the nation. If you're a child, if you're an adult, have a backup plan just in case your number one plan does not work.
I want to, Nick, before you respond, because I see your mouth is agape. Tom Brady just came out and said one other thing I want to ask you about. He said, I never cared about legacy. Do you buy that, Nick?
That he never cared about it, no. That at this point, he's not concerned with it, yes, because he's already the greatest player and certainly the greatest quarterback ever. This to me reeks a bit of rich, rich people saying money's not that important. Well, what about when you were broke? What about when you didn't have it? Like that. And so for Tom Brady, who's got the greatest legacy of anyone in the history of the sport, one could argue, now he's not focused on it. And I do believe Brady was not worried about, quote, tarnishing, unquote, his legacy by going to Tampa. That's a media creation anyway. You should never be able to tarnish your legacy by continuing to play. So I do buy Wilds. It's not his focus now. I don't buy it's something he never cared about.
No, I'm sure he cared about it. Like, once you lose two Super Bowls, you don't want to get in that LeBron part where it's like, wow, I've lost more than I've won. You know, I think that's very dangerous. Legacy-wise, sorry, we're in a good spot, but then I felt like you took a turn, so I had to take a turn. I don't know. I'm sorry.
I think
No. We did it. We leveled the playing field, Wilds. Go ahead, Bryce. Sorry.
But I think athletes are always concerned with their legacy. And you may not be thinking it when you're working out in the offseason. You may not think about it towards the end of your career. But I think you're always concerned about the legacy that you leave. You go out there and you want to participate. You want to play at a high level, not just for the accolades, not just to win games, but to be able to say, and I think in Tom Brady's case, to be able to say, I was one of the best ever, or I am the best ever. And I think Tom Brady probably wasn't being 100% truthful if you say he wasn't concerned with his legacy at any point during his career.
That's true.
All right, we got a couple other stories want to fly through this morning. Kevin Garnett is not interested in getting his Timberwolves jersey retired. He said, quote, I don't do business with snakes. Shots fired. This referencing Garnett's beef with Minnesota owner Glenn Taylor. Nick, does this surprise you?
Doesn't surprise me. It makes me a little sad. It makes me a little sad for KG. It makes me a little sad for the great people of the, you know, Minneapolis and the greater Minneapolis area. He's the best player in the history of their franchise. He's the most important player in the history of their franchise. And I understand why KG feels that Glenn Taylor went back on his word when Flip Saunders passed away, that KG was going to be brought into the front office, maybe in some ownership capacity. And KG is a guy who's known to hold grudges. So it doesn't surprise me, but Wilds, it bums me out because KG should have a place within the Timberwolves organization.
I totally agree. I think this is an unmitigated disaster for Glenn Taylor. Whatever you have to do to break bread with KG, sit down and iron this out. This cannot be the way Minnesota moves forward. He played 14 years there. He played 6 years with the Celtics. as a Celtic fan, I'm like, great, KG's here. But, like, I would love if the Minnesota fans could feel the same way about KG and make it official as Boston fans do, Brian.
You know, one of the things as an athlete, you're always saying that there's no loyalty in sports. And you kind of hope that when you waive your no trade clause to go back from Brooklyn back to Minnesota, you're saying there actually is some loyalty. I am able to believe what the owner is saying, and he is going to give me a front office and ownership opportunity. And when that doesn't happen, now your faith as an athlete in that man, it just goes out the window at the end of the day. And that this, I think KG believes this, and I believe it myself, is that every man, woman, really only has their word. And when you go back on your word, I can't trust you. And in that way, that's why KG is kind of explaining it as a snake and things like that. But I kind of understand them. If you go back on your word with me, I'm out on you completely. We can never be friends in that type of manner anymore.
Oh, boy.
Got it. I got a mental note. Don't go back on your anything.
That's right, Jenna.
Brian Westbrook. Finally, this morning, talking some Jared Stidham, our friends over at Fox Bet have Stidham as the odds-on favorite to be the Patriots' Week 1 starting quarterback. And his former quarterbacks coach at Baylor, Kendall Briles, agrees. He said, quote, he is ready for the moment. Brian, I'll send it right back to you quickly. Yeah. You bind Stidham as the guy to replace Tom Brady.
I think he's the guy that they don't have any other choice to go to. He's a guy that was in the building when Tom Brady was there last. I don't think the Patriots have any other choice. And I also think that Bill Belichick, in the same way that Brady wants to kind of prove that he can win somewhere else, Bill Belichick wants to be able to prove that he's the greatest coach of all time and that he can win without Tom Brady. And to be able to do that, and if they can win with Jared Stidham, he will be actually proving that he is the greatest coach of all time. I just don't see it happening.
Nick, my power ranking of dreams, I've moved Cam down to 2. I'm moving Tua up to 1, Stidham at 3. Post-draft, we'll see how it shakes out. Okay, well, that makes sense. That means number 1 actually is a dream. Number 2 is close to it. And then immediately it turns into a nightmare. What is a nightmare for you is an absolute dream for me. I love it. No odds have made me happier than when I was able to bet the Cavs at plus 700 to win the title in 2016 after they're down 3-1. Minus money for Stidham to be the Week 1 starter. I love it. It's great. What a wonderful way to end the show. As Tom Brady's dropping F-bombs on Stern, I get to watch Wilds drop F-bombs about Stidham. I love it, Jenna.
We gotta go. See you tomorrow.
Getting to us, so it doesn't matter.